Well, hello there. How do you do? My name is Xi Jinping, and I am the dictator of China. And I want to explain to you today why I will soon be your dictator as well. And the reason for that is that we in China, and also people in Russia and India, they have this implicit religion, if you like. They have this sense. This pagan sense that they need to be great, that they and their people need to strive for greatness, that there is some sort of mission that they are on, some sort of great mission for the greatness of them and the greatness of people like them, and that this involves basically winning battles and dominating people like you. And of course, you don't have that. You used to have that. You used to have this sense that there was something brilliant about you, something wonderful about you, something perfect about you, something above others about you. But you don't have that anymore. You have this strange sense that the story has run out, this sense of guilt about yourself, this sense that you're unworthy, this sense that things don't quite make sense, this sense that life is pointless and it's not really worth bothering about, this sense that it's this dysphoria, this sense that it's all just kind of run out. But we haven't got there yet. We're kind of like your grand, the World War II generation where you come from. We have this feeling of destiny, this feeling that it's there to be taken, this feeling that what we have is great and we can achieve even greater feats. And that's the difference between us, you see. That's why we're different, and that's why we're going to dominate you. But I've been reading that if you want to dominate the West, then what you have to do is you have to sort of adopt the culture of the West in a sort of ostentatious way, and then they'll lie on the floor like little dogs having their bellies tickled, and they'll just let you walk in. This is what the Greeks did. The Romans adopted Greek culture and then just walked in and invaded and took over the Greeks. So, in that regard, I've been learning English. I know that Donald Trump has said that the only word I can say is repeat, but I can say lots of words in English, and I've been learning the accent, and I've got the dress right, you see. I've got sort of English dapper dandy gentleman dress here with the cravat and so on. And then look, the sort of Roman helmet. What do you think? It's rather good, don't you think? And so I think I'm doing jolly well. So I look forward to ruling you. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, before we begin, a quick word from our sponsor.
Before we start, I'd just like to say a word about our sponsor, and that is Atlas VPN. Now, here's the situation, chaps. We are all truth seekers here at the Jolly Heretic Public House. We all want to know the truth about the world, and the only way we can do that is if we get lots of different perspectives, lots of alternative perspectives. And we are in a situation where we cannot get that. The internet is censored, everything is censored, and we literally cannot get the other side with regard to certain important events that are happening in the world because of the way that they censor the internet. So the only thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, is to use a VPN. And Atlas VPN is currently running a huge discount. It means you can get a 3-month subscription for just $1.83 a month, plus 3 months for free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And so time is running out, so it's worth looking into, really. There's lots and lots of benefits to this. Not only is that you've got that deal, but you could unlock your favorite content from all over the world. You know, shows from friends or whatever it is you like are using Atlas VPN. You can keep your Google searches private. They make sure that your results aren't tracked and so forth. You can stop ads and malware. It's more than just a VPN. It blocks malicious links and ads and so forth, and it notifies you when someone's trying to steal your data. And you can save money online. It notifies you of the best deals, and it can protect unlimited devices. So it seems to be a jolly good idea. And as I say, they've currently got this campaign where it's just $1.83 a month. So, you know, it's worth thinking about. $1.83 a month for a 3-year subscription, plus 3 months for free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Time is running out, so, you know, it's certainly worth looking into. So, as a person that is in favour of the truth and wants as much as many different perspectives as possible and is finding these blocked by our current system, I think getting a VPN is worth doing. And as far as I can see, Atlas VPN is where it's at, chaps.
Right, back to the video. Okay, here's the situation, chaps. People have been asking me about my thoughts on the assassination of Alexander Dugin's daughter. And as you know, I have interviewed Alexander Dugin on this channel. We didn't agree on anything, really. Well, very few things we agreed on. And he had this idea that being Russian involves a spirit of Russianness that enters you, and then anyone who is entered by that spirit can be Russian. I don't agree with that. And he had this idea that there's such a thing as a kind of Russian truth. It strikes me that such ideas are basically sort of postmodern nationalism. It's sort of postmodernism for right-wing people. So I didn't agree with that either. But obviously it is terrible what has happened to Mr. Putin, or to Professor Putin, that his daughter has been assassinated. Now, the question is, why was she assassinated? What's going on here? Whether it was her that was the target or him. In both cases, they are ultra-nationalists within Russia. So it can be regarded as a symbolic target. Now, who was behind this? What kind of terrorist group would be able to and would want to kill a symbolic target of this kind? Well, one of the groups that has claimed responsibility for it is the National Republican Army, who are a Russian anti-Putin group. Now, let's have a look at what the Russians immediately claimed was that it was Ukrainian operatives within Russia, that they came in, that this woman apparently with her daughter, that they did their act of terrorism and they got out very quickly via Estonia. Now, naturally, this is too good to be true. Naturally, it came to light far too quickly. And I think we should be rather sceptical of it. It seems that if it was the Ukrainians that were backing this, wouldn't they be more likely to go for some sort of military official, go for some sort of military target, something like that? One. And two, it seems improbable that the Ukrainians would be able to penetrate that deep into Russia such that they could engage in terrorist action within Moscow itself. What seems rather more likely is that this is a homegrown terrorist group, a homegrown terrorist group that is backed by the Ukrainians, perhaps, because at this point, those that are the enemies of the Russian regime are likely to be backed by Russia's enemies abroad, and therefore by the Ukrainians, but nevertheless people within Russia. So it seems much more likely to me that it would be some sort of homegrown terrorist group. And then secondly, who would a homegrown terrorist group go for? Well, they probably wouldn't go for members of the military. They'd go for something that would act as a kind of a recruiting sergeant. They'd go for something that was symbolically important. They'd go for a famous person, something like that. That's the kind of people that the IRA used to assassinate within the UK, people like Lord Mountbatten. He has no significance to the British government, really, but he's a symbolic target. And then the fact that you can kill that symbolic target makes waves and acts as a kind of a recruiting sergeant and makes people want to join the organisation. It kind of draws attention to it in that kind of way. So it seems to me most likely what you have within Russia is and oligarchs and so on who were pissed off by Putin, you would have them helping to fund something like this, perhaps you would have Ukraine helping to fund something like this, and they would go for some sort of symbolic target. And of course it has worked, because this has been far more newsworthy and has got far more news coverage than would have been the case had they managed to assassinate some Russian general or something like that. So I suspect that the National Republican Army are telling the truth. Now, this crosses over into broader questions of how we can expect the coming battle between East and West to pan out. Up until now, there has been a covert war between NATO and her enemies. Until now, you have had Russia and other such have been happy engaging in cyber warfare, in leaking state secrets, in killing their enemies on Western soil, in encouraging drug running, and all that sort of thing. It seems to me perfectly possible, I don't know, but that they might also be behind encouraging general silliness in the West, If I was in charge of Russia or China and I wanted to take power in the world, that's what I'd do. I would encourage activity within the West that subverted the West, that stopped the West from being nationalistic, basically, that stopped the West from standing up for itself. So I would be helping out groups like Extinction Rebellion. I would be helping out the train drivers that want to go on strike. I would be helping out woke groups like Hope Not Hate or whatever. I would be funding people like them. Anything to make the West weak, to make the West feel guilty, to make the West not want to stand up for itself, to make the West feel a sense of dysphoria, to make the West conflict ridden, to make the West not feel that it's good, to make the West feel rubbish, basically, and guilty and bad. That's the kind of thing, and generally confused and in disarray. That's the kind of stuff that I would be funding. Now, what you've also had, of course, it really is a kind of an economic war. It could be argued it's very interesting that COVID and also the war in Ukraine have come at the optimum time to completely cripple the West. First of all, you have COVID, and they will have known that Western people are going to be far less able psychologically to cope with something like this than people in the East. People in the East have a sense of, to a greater extent than in the West, I'm not saying all of them, but they have a sense of purpose. They have a sense that the future for them is great and golden and wonderful. They have a sense of going somewhere and being something in the future, perhaps a little bit like we had in the 1950s. They have a sense of their own glory, a sense of their own destiny, this kind of pagan sense of a great name, this kind of pagan sense that a person who is great can become one of the gods, that or a people that are great can become a godly people, a sense that we had a number of generations ago, but we don't have it anymore. We are now these atomized individuals that are just interested in material concerns, that have no religious belief, very little even implicit religious belief, and have just a general sense of doom and despair, and a general sense that things are getting worse and things are coming apart. Why? Well, partly because we're in this extreme evolutionary mismatch now, and which they're not, of course, which helps to induce a sense of dysphoria, a sense of despair, a sense of just things just not quite being right. And if you can help to make that even worse, then you end up with a people who just don't care, a people who are like rabbits frozen in the headlights that just don't know what to do, a people like when the Estonia sank in 1994, who don't even bother to leave the sinking ship because they're just there's no one leading them, and they're just confused and they just don't know what to do. That's the kind of effect that you get in the West of things like this, but you don't in the East, because these people are higher in mortality salience, they are higher in grit, and they are therefore higher in a kind of religiousness, and they have basically a feeling of just getting on with it, which is something that we have. That's why you didn't have lockdown in the UK when you had a massive flu outbreak in the late 60s. It's why you've never, ever previously had anything like lockdown in the UK, even when we understood how it was that these kinds of diseases spread. You didn't shut down the society because you just had to, A, because you couldn't afford to, or even remotely afford to, but B, because you just had to get on with it. Now, by doing that, we have, of course, crippled the economy. We crippled the economy, and we've seriously damaged ourselves psychologically, and they know that. Now, the second related issue then becomes the war in Ukraine, which should be fine. It shouldn't cause a problem for the West, but it has caused a problem for the West because we have allowed ourselves to be sucked into these nasty virtue signalling left-wing policies, whereby we have introduced preposterous, environmentally friendly means of producing energy and whatever, and basically limited our own ability to not do fracking, all this kinds of this kind of guilt-induced, lie-induced, virtue-signalling, leftist nonsense. such that we don't have the access to the energy that we need, such that we have permitted ourselves to be reliant either directly or indirectly on Russian oil and on Russian gas, which they've then sold to China, and we have to buy from China at highly inflated prices. So we're reliant on Chinese resources. So we've basically made ourselves, through our virtues, through our policies towards Russia, through our fact that we care so much about what's going on in the Ukraine and so forth, rather than just let, as we should do in Britain, just let Europeans fight each other. Europeans always fight each other. It's what they do. We should stand up. It's not our problem. And it should never be our problem. It shouldn't have been our problem in 1939. And it shouldn't be our problem now. Let Europeans fight each other. It's never, it should never be the problem of the British. If anything, it's really good for the interest of the British that Europeans are not united and they are fighting each other. But no, no, no. I was in Sussex a few weeks ago in Fishbourne Palace in Sussex. And in the gardens in this area, Ukrainian flags. Didn't see a single British flag, but Ukrainian flags. Anyway, what is the result of all this? It is the West is economically crippled. And it will continue to be economically crippled. As it's come at just the right time, COVID plus this, to economically cripple the West. And what you would expect to happen is for China and Russia and India, perhaps, to make their moves for glory at exactly the time when the West is economically crippled. You might expect there to be new 9/11s. You might expect there to be more terrorist subversion within the West, to sow, sponsored by Russia or China, to sow confusion, to sow just a general chaos within the West in exactly this context when it is at its lowest ebb. There would be no need for war, therefore, to bring down the West. There won't be a war. It won't be when Rome took over Greece, there was at least some kind of fighting. Not much. I mean, a lot of them just couldn't quite believe it was happening and just sort of carried on partying while Romans marched in. But there was some sort of reaction. There won't be any kind of reaction. We don't have the balls to react anymore. This isn't like 1982 when Galtieri invaded the Falklands. If Galtieri or the equivalent of Galtieri invaded the Falklands now, we would just let him have it. And this is where we are. We are weakened. We are in disarray. We have no sense of our own purpose. We are disunited for various reasons. And we can't act. It's impossible to act. And they know that. We can act by, you know, economic sanctions or whatever. But actual serious action, actual serious shows of strength, that's not going to happen. So what you're going to find is there'll be no need for war. What people like the Chinese leader and what the Russian leader will do is they will sponsor coups within small Western countries in order to get governments that either are on their side or which just make the country weaker and easier to take over. They will sow such chaos within the lands that basically they will be able to invade unopposed. They will be able to walk in unopposed. They will sow such economic and social chaos within Western countries that eventually China will want to take over Taiwan, and China will be able to take over Taiwan because the West will be so weak and in such disarray that there'll be no problem. It won't have the ability to do anything about it. It will cry and hand-wring and encourage Taiwanese people to come to Western countries and goodness knows what. But ultimately, that China will have no problem taking Taiwan. And on this will go. And eventually, I suspect, we will be in a situation where China and Russia will basically just run Western countries, will be in charge without a shot being fired. They won't need to invade. They will simply, through various processes, install client governments in the slowly, gradually, salami tactics, install client governments within these countries. But the lead up to that will involve them sponsoring terrorism, will involve them sponsoring policies which weaken the West and weaken Western countries. The breakup of the United Kingdom, obviously, and once that's broken up, then subversion and breakup within England, and ultimately you just have these chaotic little peoples, and you don't need to fight. You can just march in and help them reorganize their chaotic economies and feel that sense of glory that sense of glory, which we don't seem to feel anymore, and indeed we don't seem to care about, and we haven't felt for a long time. And that is why the Dugin assassination is so fascinating, because it shows you how geopolitics works in these kinds of situations, that you how terrorist groups operate, that you try to sow discord within a country. Well, that's what they've tried to do within Russia. It's not really worked, as far as we can see, but that's what they will try to do within the UK and within other countries in the West, and I suspect it will work. The problem is that when they take over the world, how long will it last? And the answer, I think, is not very long, because Russia is definitely in dysgenic fertility, and China is also, to a lesser extent, in dysgenic fertility. So you would expect exactly the same problems of decadence, of despair, of everything unravelling, of feelings of meaninglessness to come upon China and Russia fairly quickly. So I don't think that this is going to stem the general collapse which I've looked at so many times in other videos, but I do think that it might slow it down slightly, and I do suspect that it will be places like Russia and China that will take the torch for a while of civilization, while the Greece that is the West is in total disarray due to its own dysphoria and due to the policies of China and Russia to increase dysphoria. And I think that, as I say, the assassination of Dugin's daughter is symbolic of this. Well, ni hao.
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke, joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you could also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!